now move to our the third presentation will be made by Dr. George Haynes, who is at Montana State University. He earned a doctorate in consumer economics and housing from Cornell University. George has taught at Montana State University since 1994 in the departments of health and human development and agricultural economics and economics. He's currently an agricultural policy specialist in the Department of Agriculture Economics and Economics. His contributions to the field of consumer finance and economics has been in the area of family business finance and health costs. These lines of research have produced 35 refereed journal articles, 5 book chapters, and 50 conference presentations, as well as 45 different monographs. His most important contributions to the family business finance work has been in examining the intermingling of family and business financial resources. George is active in the area of family business finance through his participation in the American Council on Consumer Interests, the United States Association of Small Business and Entrepreneurship, and his editorial board responsibilities with the Journal of Family and Economic Issues. George also serves as president of the American Council on Consumer Interest. George, thank you for joining us today to present information on Farm Bill implications for beginning farmer programs. George, the floor is yours.
Okay, John, thanks a lot for the introduction. The previous presentations, of course, are really critical to the beginning farmers that are out there, especially conservation programs where a lack of compliance will take the subsidies away from them, and the organic market development, healthy food, especially crop area, really critical to many of the beginning farmers that I see during my work in Montana throughout the year. I'm going to give you a kind of a 30,000-foot review of the beginning farmer rancher programs. Many of the provisions for these programs have not been released by Farm Service Agency and others yet, but I think we have a reasonable idea of what's out there. So we'll go through and take a look at kind of a primer on these programs, and really I'm going to focus mostly on the, in fact entirely on the changes in these programs rather than going through and reviewing previous requirements and so on that were needed to participate in beginning farmer. The overall funding for these programs, and I really don't think of the Farm Bureau in 10-year increments, but in this particular we're looking at about a $440 million budget for beginning farmer programs is estimated by Congressional Budget Office folks. This is a really substantial increase over what was spent in the previous Farm Bill to try to help promote these beginning socially disadvantaged. And then we'll see that there's going to be quite a bit of military veteran language in this as well. So some really important sort of additional funding there. If you think about it in terms of the total Farm Bill, subtracting out the nutrition title, it's still around 1 or 2% of the Farm Bill, so it's a relatively small number, but yet a really an important number for those working in the beginning farmer rancher arena. Here's what the funding looks like, and then reverting back to 5-year totals. The Beginning Farmer Rancher Program gets some additional money, $20 million for per year for educational purposes. Outreach for social and disadvantaged and veteran producers was reduced some, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. The Conservation Reserve Program, the Transition Incentive Program, which is really quite a very popular program in the previous Farm Bill, received a little bit of additional funding. It'll turn out to be a little over $6 million a year. And then the Federal Crop Insurance Premium Reductions, this is the big boy. There's really nothing in that in the previous Farm Bill to help out with federal crop insurance premium subsidies, but this time around there's a substantial amount of money there. In fact, the estimates are that over the Farm Bill may be in the $260 million range, so it'll be a really important part of the portion of the Farm Bill dedicated to beginning farmers. So to qualify as a beginning farmer rancher, there's been a little bit of change in the language here. The first one of these is this producer that's applying for this money cannot own a farm that's greater than 30% of the average size farm in the county. That's just a really kind of a minor change in language. It used to be a median size farm in the county. So I guess maybe to make the computation of this a little easier, we're now using the word average. The second component of this is on these farm loans. If you're Needed to participate in the business operation of a farm or ranch for 3 years. There's much more flexibility in what's going to count for participation. So that flexibility, depending on who you're visiting with, can be include just about anything that had to do with working on a farm or ranch over some period of time, and that period of time being relatively important over some 3 year period. The beginning of farmer rancher development program, as I mentioned before, has $100 million over 5 years. It was funded at a slightly lower level than the previous farm bill. Probably the most important additional language that's gone into this particular outreach effort here will be the recognition of military veterans and putting, allocating some funds directly for that particular group of folks. The set-aside program for assisting socially disadvantaged and limited resource producers was reduced from 25% being allocated to that to some other language that suggested it can't be not less than 5%. So, of course, that'll be determined by proposals, of course, that come in for this money and where those might be, those proposals might be directed. But my experience with that, substantial portion of that money really has been allocated for socially disadvantaged limited resource producers, and so we'll have to see as we as this rolls itself out over the next few months exactly how those dollars will be allocated. On the conservation title part of this, there's a conservation set-aside for beginning farmer ranchers, socially disadvantaged, limited resource, Indian tribes that are specified as well, and then military veterans. This is for both the Conservation Stewardship Program, which we've already talked about, and then for EQIP as well. Under the EQIP program, a couple of things that are important. One of them is that they'll now guarantee 90% of it, which is similar to the previous farm bill, although now you can get a 50% advance on expenditures that you're going to make under your EQIP allocation, and that's up from 30% last time around. On the conservation loan program, that guarantee has been bumped up to 90%, and again, a 10% increase from what was in the previous legislation in 2008. Probably the program that has received, the most attention, at least as I've been around the state with other FSA people, has been this transition incentive program. This essentially provides for these farmers that are retiring or they've been retired that have some of their land enrolled in CRP. They used to get one additional year of annual rental payment. Now that's been bumped up to two, with the, of course, the intent to try to encourage them to sell to either beginning farmer, rancher, or, socially disadvantaged or veteran producer. So some important language there. Our Green Growers Association here in the state was, most excited probably about this part of the legislation as anything that was there, apart from the commodity program. So I think an important provision. The microloan program, which is funded through the FSA's direct operating loan program, has now moved from being a temporary program to being permanent. There's actually mandatory spending or money that's been set aside for this. The maximum loan has been increased from $35,000 before to $50,000 now. The interest rate that's charged on that loan has some kind of interesting language in it. They said, well, the interest rate will either be the limited resource rate or the regular operating loan rate. The limited resource rate actually goes back some time with Farm Service Agency and actually is set at 5%. Regular operating loan rates, of course, are substantially below that now, so it's we'll see what happens over the next over the term of the farm bill, but they'll never be higher than 5%. Although right now that regular operating loan rate is substantially below, I think, around the 2.5% range. One of the most important parts of the microloan program, I think, is that you're now exempt from the term limit. So if you've applied for a microloan program, it doesn't count to the the 10-year limit that you used to have before. This is just not counting in that calculation. The other part of this is, and this is yet to be established, but there is some language out there for a pilot program so the intermediate lenders can now partner with USDA, you know, primarily with Farm Service Agency to offer these microloans, and there'll be some kind of interest rate incentive to do that. The down payment loan program is another important provision in there for these smaller producers. Now you can actually purchase up to $667,000 worth of property. This is an adjustment just for the rising land values, you know, throughout the U.S., but especially in the Midwest. The FFA will make a contribution to this of, up to $300,000. The interest rate on this is the regular loan rate, less 4%, or it has a floor on it of 1.5%. And so right now the effective rate on these down payment loan program is a 1.5% for beginning farmer ranchers. The direct and guaranteed farm ownership and operating loans have some language that we've already touched on before, but again, there's this increased flexibility on farm management experience, and as I suggested before, almost anything counts. And I think that's really some important change of language here to, you know, encourage people that have interest in farming and ranching to get in the business. There's lower rates, lower interest rates to encourage joint financing as these farmers, the farmer, the USDA, and a private lender can participate on those. That rules the game on that interest rate. You have whatever the going rate is, less 2%, or a floor on that of 2.5%. And right now, the effective rate on that particular program is at 2.5%. Probably one of the areas that I think, at least in the crowd that I work with, was the decrease in funding on the 2501 program. There's several interpretations of this that are kind of floating around in the media. I think the one that, and again, we'll wait till we see the rules of the game from USDA, but it appears to me that the funding's been reduced from $75 to $50 million over this period of time of the Farm Bill. So we're looking at about $10 million being available for 2501 programming. Over that period of time, there's some other commentators on this suggested there was only $10 million available over the Farm Bill. I don't believe that that is correct. So this is at least my most current reading of that. Some other programs that are important to these beginning farmers, if you're buying NAP coverage, non-insured crop assistance, that premium has been reduced to half of whatever the regular premium rate is for that particular product. When you're reporting your average actual production history and you need some plug rates to put in for years that you were not in the business, those can be inserted in 85% rather than 65% traditional yield. So a couple of incentives there. One to have insurance, and whether you're buying NAP insurance or federal crop insurance as well. Yeah, I think the insurance subsidy on this, perhaps one of the really important parts of the legislation, the beginning farmers get a 10% point reduction in crop insurance premiums for the first 5 years of farming. This has come under a little bit of criticism, I think, primarily because people getting in the business for the first 5 years may have fewer acres that are available under that would be eligible for crop insurance, federal crop insurance. Of course, they get in the business longer, they're going to own or have more property at either owning or leasing, and so perhaps it's front loaded just a little bit, and perhaps some thought that maybe extending that length of time for a few more years might be of really important to many of these producers. This program, about $26 million a year, $261 million estimated over the 10 years of the program. But this has now become the most significant piece of the beginning farmer program has been this federal crop insurance subsidization that's available to these producers. Those that are involved with any value added, there's some additional language there too. These producers, the value-added producers, are putting their proposals forth. They will be given some priority for those particular notions or ideas that are judged to serve these small and medium-sized farmers, and most importantly, beginning and socially disadvantaged farmers. So it'll be interesting to see how that particular provision works as these proposals come forth for, you know, food processors and others. And then finally, there will be a military agricultural liaison that will be appointed. And as you read much of this language, there's a really important focus in this in the legislation to assist with these military veterans that are. And the last item here is, this is something that was available in the last farm bill as well. This is beginning farmer, rancher, individual development accounts. They just essentially match savings programs. This has been authorized in the farm bill, but there's no mandatory funding that's been set aside for this. So this will see how this what legislation is brought forth to provide some additional some money for this program as we move forward. So with that, that's my contribution to this morning's session, and if there are any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
Well, George, thank you very much for those comments. Very helpful and understanding exactly what's planned for the beginning farmer-rancher aspect under the Farm Bill. We have several questions for you that have come in as well, so let's get going with those. First one asks, can the microloan program that you described used for anything related to the farmer ranch, possibly including equipment?
My understanding with microloan programs that they are open to use for any expenditures that you have that are farm and ranch related.
Okay. Another question asked, does the $667,000 solely address farmland, or would it be available for residence purchase as well, and if it were on the farm?
Oh, I would have to refer that to Farm Service Agency. I don't know the answer to that question. I've been under the assumption it was for farmland purchase, but I would refer that to FSA. I don't know.
Okay. Another question asked, you mentioned a 10% limit. What insurance products would that 10% apply to? I'm guessing that's referring to the crop insurance aspect.
Yeah, I think that would apply to the any federal crop insurance that you're purchasing, because you have some other provisions. If you're buying NAP coverage, you actually get a 50% premium reduction for that, so that wouldn't apply there, but it would apply for your any federal crop insurance that you might buy.
Okay, well, thank you again, George.